2 Samuel chapter number 10. A lot of good things in here tonight. So instead of focusing on just a few things, we're just going to hit quite a few things very quickly. And the title of tonight's message is Lessons from 2 Samuel chapter number 10. Lessons from 2 Samuel chapter number 10. If you're in a habit of taking outlines, probably if there was an outline, it would be the first two verses is called the charity for Amnon or Ammon. Then you see the contempt by Ammon in verses 3 through 5. And then you see a conflict with Ammon in verses 6 through 19. It's kind of interesting. Last week we learned about Mephibosheth. We learned about the kindness that David showed to Mephibosheth. And it was a desire that was on David's heart. He didn't have to do it. Most people wouldn't have done it. But he did it, remember, on the behalf of Jonathan. And you're going to see tonight that David tries to show kindness to another man. And he tries to show kindness to another man on behalf of another man. And his kindness is rejected. Have you ever tried to show kindness to someone and they reject it? Have you ever tried to show someone the kindness and they thought evil about you? And they thought that you were trying to do something for some ulterior motive? And they respond in a very evil or wicked way? And that's what happens here. Tonight, David shows kindness and tries to be a blessing to the king of Ammon. And he turns around and is very wicked and evil towards him and his messengers. He said, what can you learn from this? Well, here's one thought is that the kindness of God is what David showed to Mephibosheth last week. This week, he's showing once again kindness. You can consider it kindness from the Lord. And it's rejected. And you see that there's a mess that follows. And God shows and demonstrates his kindness and mercy to all the world. And some will receive it and are greatly blessed. Some reject it, and then there's a great mess. And that's what you're going to see in the story tonight. It kind of is the idea that last week someone received the kindness. This week they rejected it. And because of that, there's a great bloodshed. Just as some received the gospel with great delight, and some reject it with great doom. So what we're going to do is we're going to read through the verses and just kind of tell the story. And then as we tell the story, we'll go back and learn. Like I said, there's probably 7 or 8 just little things that the Lord spoke to my heart about that I think that you can learn and grow from tonight in this passage of Scripture. But we're going to tell the story first. And let's go in here and start in verse number 1. And it came to pass that after this, that the king of the children of Ammon died, and Hanun, his son, reigned in his stead. So you picture this. We know that Amnon was, they were enemies of Israel back in 1 Samuel chapter number 11. They were the ones that talked about taking out the one eye just to show that they were under servitude of them and this and that. They were bad people. Well, that was when Saul was there. Things have changed now. David and the king of Ammon has become friends. At least he showed kindness to him. David hears that he has passed away. David knows what it's like to be a new king, and David wants to be kind to this new king. So let's see what it says in verse number 2. Then said David, I will show kindness unto Hanun, the son of Nahash, as his father showed kindness unto me. Well, where do you see that in the Bible? We don't see what type of kindness was shown, but we do know that there was kindness shown between the two of those. And because of that kindness, David wants to respond by showing kindness to his son, by helping him mourn for the passing of his father, but also to encourage him as king. And you got to remember, at this point in time, David is, of all the kingdoms, David's got one of the biggest now. Things have pretty much settled down. There isn't much war. If you looked at the chapters earlier, David has had lots of great victories. People aren't going to mess with David. Like Ammon would not go pick a fight with David on purpose unless he thought, and unless they're going to do it foolishly like they do tonight. And it says, and David sent to comfort him by the hand of his servants for his father. So he sends out some ambassadors, some of the servants, to go comfort him because of what happened to his father. Once again, David is showing kindness based off of another man's, what they've done. And David's servants came into the land of the children of Ammon. So they are going in there as ambassadors. They're just going there to probably present a gift, to say certain words, to try to be encouragement to them. These ambassadors would not be just common run-of-the-mill servants. These would be people who have a dignified position. They are someone who David trusted, and he would send his best to another king. So these are guys that are probably very well off, or at least well-to-do, very high-ranking in society. Verse number 3, and the princes of the children of Ammon said to Hanun, their lord. So the princes, the guys that work with Hanun, or Hanun, thinkest thou that David doth honor thy father? He says, you need to think about this, king. You're thinking that this man is showing you some type of kindness or mercy and just being a friend, but he says, I want you to consider this. And it's important to understand there are people out there that will always be critical. There are people who will look at things that, from an angle of being trying to slander someone else, especially when someone else is trying to do good. Thinkest thou that David doth honor thy father, that he hath sent comforters unto thee? Hath not David rather sent his servants unto thee to search the city and to spy it out and to overthrow it? So he says to him, look, they sent these servants because they're spies. They're not really ambassadors or comforters. Verse number 4 says, wherefore Hanun took David's servants and shaved off one half of their beards. Now you can imagine what that would look like back in Bible time, especially in the nation of Judah. Their beard represents a lot of different things. Back in that time, the beard was a sign of respect, a sign of age, and they were known for having a little bit longer beard. So they went and shaved off half of it. What are they trying to do? They're trying to embarrass them. They're trying to shame them. Back in Bible times, they did not cut or shave their beard like this unless it was a time of mourning or a time of great distress. It was something that was shameful to have your beard shaved all the way off unless it was for a certain reason. And it says, and cut off their garments in the middle, even to their buttocks, and sent them away. So they actually cut off their garments to reveal things that would normally be covered. So it's shaming them on the front by getting rid of their beard that they held in such high esteem. Even reading through some of the commentaries, people would rather die than have their beard shaved off. You know, if it was a sign of shame. When someone came in and they conquered a land, they would shame them by shaving off their beard. So this was an insult. This was some, they were trying to shame, they're trying to disgrace these men. They're trying to send a message to David. In verse number 5, when they told it unto David, he sent to meet them because the men were greatly ashamed. And the king said, tarry at Jericho until your beards be grown and then return. So you got to understand, these men who were doing just nothing but a messenger of the king, they were doing what the king asked them to do. They were saying what the king asked them to say. They were going where the king asked them to go. And they were shamed for doing the king's business. And then, so David wants to show them mercy, wants to show them kindness, doesn't want to bring them all the way back to Israel where they would also be shamed. Instead, he laughed at, maybe mocked. Instead, he says, look, go to Jericho, which is a more private area. Allow your beard to grow back. We don't expect you to come back. You're still going to have your position. You're still going to have everything that's there that's yours. Then return. Verse number 6, and when the children of Ammon saw that they stank before David. Now, I thought that was kind of interesting, that what they did, they made David turn up his nose to them. They stunk because of the things they did, and Ammon, trying to figure it out, they did something stupid. They should not have went and picked a fight with someone who was bigger than them, and they should not try to shame them, but this is what evil does. You're going to see how evil, and they listen to slander, they listen to unreason, they listen to the wrong, and because of that, they follow through by doing something disgraceful. Now they have a choice. They can repent, or they're going to have to get ready to fight. Now, if they would have just wrote to David and said, David, that they apologize and make amends to these men, I think everything would have been fine. Everything would have been good. David would not have began this, but instead they understood that they stank before David. And I tell you, sometimes when people do wicked things, it stinks. And it stinks, and we turn up our nose because of the stench of the things that they do. The children of Ammon, says in verse number 6, sent and hired Assyrians. Now, they're getting ready to spend a lot of money. You go to 1 Chronicles, you have a parallel passage. It talks about how they gave 1,000 talents, which means it was probably about $5.5 million in the day and time that we live in today, that they go and hire other people to help them attack Israel. They hired the Syrians of Bathrobe and the Syrians of Zobah, 20,000 footmen of the king of Maacah, 1,000 men, and of Ishtob, 12,000 men. So you add that up, that's a lot of men, 20,000, 12,000, 1,000. They hired these mercenaries. It's not their fight, but they're going to get ready to be part of the fight. And when David heard it, he sent Joab and all the hosts of the mighty men. Now you see that the group that they sent out is the mightiest of the mighty soldiers, the mighty men. We hear a little bit about David, especially towards the end of this book. And the children of Ammon came out and put in the battle in array at the entering of the gate, and the Syrians of Zobah and of Rehob and of Ishtab and Makkah were by themselves in the field. So what happens is that they have the children of Ammon are in their city, they're in their gate, and over there is a field. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to flank behind as the Israelites come for the battle. They want one side to attack as the other side attack. And you see what Joab does. He recognizes what's happening, and he begins to get ready to fight. And it says, and Joab saw the front of the battle was against him in verse number 9. And behind him, he chose all the choice men of Israel and put them in array against the Syrians. So on this side, if you had the Syrians, he took even the best of the best and says, okay, we're going to go attack the Syrians. You say, well, that seems a little bit odd. Why would he take that group and attack them? Well, the Syrians were probably a stronger army, stronger warriors than where they were at out in the field. On the other side, he leads another group. It says, and the rest of the people, in verse number 10, he delivered into the hand of Abishai is his brother, that he might put them in array against the children of Ammon. So there was a group that was here on one side fighting the Syrians. The other group was here, and they were behind, their backs were there, so that way no one could attack them from behind. They were protecting one another. Verse number 11, he said, if the Syrians be too strong for thee. And then once again, Joab is seeing what's happening here. He realizes that his troops are probably not as big as the Syrians and Ammon's combined. That's the reason why they would divide them up. He says, look, if one happens, there's a good chance that this might happen. We can help one another. If the Syrians be too strong for me, then thou shalt help me. And if the children of Ammon be too strong for thee, then I will come and help thee. And he gives his pep talk, or he gives his just kind of an encouragement. He says to the group of men, be of good courage, and let us play the men for our people. That word play is referring to the fighting. We saw that earlier when it was talking about Joab and the guy that was helping Israel, the Saul's son, when they were playing before the pool and that they died. And it says, for the cities, and look for their motive. It says, for our people and for the cities of our God. He says there's a motivation here. This is not just for us. It's not to gain wealth. It's to protect our people and our cities. And look at the last phrase, and the Lord doeth that which seemeth him good. He's saying he has faith. He's saying he has trust. He says, we're going to do the best we can. We're going to fight for the right reasons. We're going to be courageous. And then we're just going to let God do whatever he thinks is right and whatever he thinks is good. Verse number 13, and Joab drew nigh, and the people that were with him unto the battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. Now, once again, there is a huge number of Syrians here. They've been bought. They've been hired to be mercenaries to take on the children of Israel. And it says that they flee before him. There really is no reason for them to flee except for the fact that God is in this and that they are worrisome about what's going to happen. Verse number 14, and when the children of Ammon saw that the Syrians were fled, then fled they also before Abishai entered into the city. So they were getting ready to fight, but when they saw all their mercenaries and all their armies that they hired ran away, they went back in the city and they didn't want to fight anymore. So Joab returned from the children of Ammon and came to Jerusalem. And when the Syrians, now remember, the Syrians is a big nation. It's huge, and they're not very happy that they ran before the Israelites. And when the Syrians saw that they were smitten before Israel, they gathered themselves together. And it says, Hadarezer sent and brought out the Syrians that were beyond the river. And they came to Helam, and Shobach, the captain of the host of Hadarezer, went before them. And when it was told David, he gathered all Israel. Now, we see here that he gathers all of Israel, not just the mighty men. And we see David himself is going out to war. This is a bigger battle. This is a bigger war with a bigger nation. And passed over Jordan and came to Helam. And the Syrians set themselves in array against David and fought with him. And the Syrians made this their own battle, made it personal. The Syrians fled before Israel. And David slew then the men of 7,000 chariots, I'm sorry, men of 700 chariots of the Syrians and 40,000 horsemen and smote Shobach, the captain of their host, who died there. And when all the kings that were servant to Hadarezer saw that they were smitten before Israel, they made peace with Israel and served them. So the Syrians feared to help the children of Ammon anymore. So you see the story. It's an amazing story. It's because of their own stupidity and their own wickedness that David, they began this fight. And you see in the end, because of the slander of a righteous person and a righteous act causes much destruction. There's a, let's see here, we got 8 different things, parts of the story I think we can learn something from. The first thing I want you to see here is the reason of the kindness. What prompted David to show this charity? What prompted David to show this kindness? And I think it's important to understand this. God desires that we show grace. We looked at that last week. We understood that because of the grace of God and because of the behalf of the what Christ has done for us, God wants us to be tenderhearted. He wants us to be kind. He wants us to be forgiving. What prompted this charity to this Gentile king? First thing, you see the death of the king. Amnon was a country of the east side of Jordan that at times caused Israel trouble, but there had been a friendship between Nahash and King David. Because of the fact that someone had passed away, David wanted to show kindness. He also wanted to show kindness on behalf of the fact his this friend, not only because of the kindness the king showed, but on behalf of him, and he had a desire. He said, why do we show kindness? And there's lots of different ways and reasons why we might show kindness. Someone might pass away. Sometimes even when there's an individual that we don't know that well, if they lose a family member, many of us have had that happen to us before, it hurts. And because it hurts, we show kindness and we want to show, whether it's been sending a card or whether it's making a meal or coming to a funeral service, whatever it is, we want to show kindness to someone. Then there's another reason why we show kindness is on the behalf of someone else. Now, if there's a friend, you know, if I have a friend and his child comes to maybe the area, maybe we'll let him stay with us. Not because I know the child that well, but because of the fact that we know the friend. We do things on kindness on behalf of someone else. It's sort of like when you go out and help somebody you've never met before, maybe help them move or help them do something at their house. You don't do that because of the fact that you know them, but because of a friend of yours asks you to do that. And then you also think about there is a desire. Sometimes God just puts a compassionate spirit in our heart, and sometimes we see people and our hearts are melted. In our hearts, God kind of says, I want you to go help that person. Maybe it's someone on the side of the road that is holding a sign, we'll work for food. Now, I won't give them money, but I have given food to someone like that before and tried to have a good conversation with them before about the gospel of Jesus Christ. And there's a kindness that's there, and that God gives us our heart. We're supposed to be kind people. We're supposed to be gracious people. We're supposed to be someone who demonstrates a heart of kindness and compassion towards others. If we had lost our father, if we were the new king and had all these things upon us, another king of a larger nation trying to show us kindness, it should mean something to us. Second thing I want you to see here is not only is there the reason for the kindness, the slander against the kindness. The slander against the kindness. For me, this reminds us that evil often attacks righteousness. It reminds us that evil often attacks righteousness. You think Joseph, in the Old Testament, he had high morals, but he was made to be immoral in the world's eyes. You think about when the woman, the Potiphar's wife, wanted to lay with him, he didn't do what was wrong, but there was slander that was given to him. Not only him, you think about Naboth and his vineyard, and remember how Ahab made up lies about him. Jezebel hired people to make up lies. They lied about the righteous person because their righteousness was offensive to them. They didn't like the fact that he wanted to keep his ground because it was his tradition and it was his heritage that came from God. He wasn't going to give up his land. Jezebel couldn't understand righteousness. Jezebel could not understand heritage. And Ahab was pouting. And so what happens there? They hire people who could care less to lie about people and tell untruths. You know what? That's what evil does. You think about even Jesus himself. What did he do? He must be working with Beelzebub. He must be on the same side as the devil. And he was only doing good things. Now, what can we learn from this? We can learn that we are going to be attacked. If we try to do what's right and we try to show kindness, it's not always going to be reciprocated. We need to make sure we're doing it for the Lord and understand our motives and we have the right motivation, because sometimes our kindness will be called into question. Sometimes our kindness will be something that people will not appreciate, but instead they'll begin to accuse you. You think about those men in verse number 3 that accused them. It was the princes, it says in verse number 3, and the princes of the children of Amnon. This accusation came from those that were in high places and respected positions. The devil loves to have an evil advocate in a high place. The devil thinks it's wonderful that there's evil and wicked people in high places of political offices today. He thinks it's great when there's professors who think that they know more than God does, and they'll talk about things like evolution, and they'll talk about things that are dishonoring, and they'll mock those things that are righteous. There are people who try to pervert the Constitution and judicial officials that could care less about what is right and slander what is right just in order to get their way across. And that's what you see happening here. They slander David and his motives. So the third thing I want you to see here, you understand there's a reason for kindness. There's slander against kindness. There's something I think we can learn from the messengers. If you go up in verse number 2, it says, "Then said David, I will show kindness unto Hanun, the son of Nahash, as his father showed kindness unto me. David sent forth comfort him by the hand of his servants." When I'm reading this and I'm looking at this, I'm thinking about our Heavenly Father, our King. And what does he do? He sends us out with a message of hope. He sends us out with a message of peace. He sends us out with a message of mercy. And it's kindness. Sometimes people don't understand when we tell them that they're lost and they're headed to hell. They don't understand. This is an act of kindness for us to tell them. But sometimes people do not understand. And sometimes people will say things and they'll make up things about you and they'll say slanderous things about you. But it's our responsibility to do what we've been called to do. We've been called to take the message. We've been called to give the message, the words that need to be said. There was a calling of the proclaimers. David sent the messengers, the country for the proclaimers. They went to the land that David had told them to go. They gave the comforting message. He said, "Pastor, what are you getting at?" This is what happens to us. When we go out to the world and we tell the world about the truth of the gospel, sometimes people are not going to like it, and sometimes people are going to say things. Mr. Parker sometimes goes up to the abortion clinic with Mr. Legg, and I've heard stories about people who do not like the fact that they try to talk to people about the Lord and try to show them there's a different way than killing their unborn babies. And I've heard how people have been rude and just, you know, they do things that are not only dishonest but also criminal. And you know why? It's because righteousness is going to be slandered. It's going to be taken in the wrong way. And you say, "Pastor, what are you getting at?" We need to do it still. It's important that we go out. And I want you to see the next thing is not only do we learn the reason for the kindness, there's things we can learn from the messengers. The devil wants to embarrass the messengers of the king. The devil wants to embarrass the messengers of the king. If you listen to what happened in verse number 4, they cut off half the beards. They cut off their garments to where they became immodest and became mocking and laughing. The devil will do whatever he can to cause you to stop. You imagine these men that are coming home, and we're not talking about, like I said, I don't think that they would have been a run-of-the-mill common servant that would have just been the first day on the job. David would not have sent that man to another king. David would have sent his best of the best, his ambassadors, people who had probably a very well-to-do family, maybe not as wealthy as being highly respected. And these men were men who were servants of the king, who listened to the king and did what the king asked them to do. And then they turn around and they try to shame them. Not only did they shame them as they were leaving, as you can imagine them leaving the lands of Ammon, that people were mocking at them and laughing at them and scorning them. You can imagine what would have been going through their heart and what would have been going through their mind. I think it's important to understand that the devil really truly wants to stop you from serving God. He does. He wants to try to embarrass you. He wants to try to shame you. He wants to try to make you think that you're not supposed to do what God's called you to. And God's service, the treatment by the people will often bring shame and reproach, even though you're trying to bring comfort. Say, "Pastor, that stuff doesn't happen to me. are we carrying the message? You know, maybe part of the reason why we don't have the devil attacking us so hard when it comes to this is because we're not telling very many people. Maybe he has you right where he wants you because we don't tell other people. It's important to get this and understand that the devil wants to try to encourage you and bring things in your life to stop. And I know sometimes, Pastor, I don't go out soul winning anymore because of this reason and this reason. And sometimes they might be legitimate things. And maybe there are certain areas that, you know, ladies shouldn't go. And maybe there are certain spots that we need to make sure we send the right people to. But if we're not doing anything, then what does the devil have to try to stop us from doing? We need to be faithful, and he tries to embarrass you, and he tries to get you to stop, and that's what he wants to do. He wants these men to be angry. The king wants to embarrass these men so that way he can mock and laugh at them, just like the devil wants to do that with us. I also thought it was kind of interesting how David takes care of him. Look at what it says in verse number 5. When they told it to David that he sent to meet them because the men were greatly ashamed, and the king said, tarry at Jericho until your beards be grown and then return. You can imagine David. I know if I was king, and I don't plan on being king, but when I was king and I sent out messengers and this happened to them, our hearts would go out to them, wouldn't they? I know it would be me. If I asked and sent somebody on a job or sent somebody out, and sometimes I send people out to a visit, and if it didn't turn out right, you know what happens is my heart and my mind being, man, I wish I went myself. And then I have to remind myself, where's faith? You know, we do things by faith and things happen and we let things. But David steps out and shows courtesy. He shows him kindness. He doesn't make them come all the way back to their hometown, to their families and to their friends where they would be mocked and looked down upon. Well, it's not supposed to be that way. And there's immature people even inside your own families, inside your own towns. David goes out and says, look, you stay here. I want to make sure you're taken care of. I want to make sure you're taken care of right. So where do we get from that? Then God takes care of us. God sees when we are reproached. God sees, you know, in the Sermon on the Mount, it talks about how we will be blessed when people go against us and when people use us and they abuse us. God sees that. God knows that. God can still take care of you. So, Pastor, what are you getting at? We got to keep on going out, because in this story, you see who wins in the end. The Israelites win. God's people. Who's going to win? When you go out to give the message of a king to someone else, God's people are going to win. Whether people reject it or not, they still heard it. And in the end, God's work is being done. Let's keep on going. Evil looks like it has an advantage. In verses 8 through 10, you see in the story that the children of Amnon came out with their mercenaries. They have a huge army that's there with them. They're getting ready to fight this battle. It looks like there's a small group against a huge group on one side and a huge group on the other side. It looks like evil is going to win. And when I consider this and I think about this, it looks like that in the world that we live in today. Evil often seems to have the advantage over truth and righteousness. Evil often seems to have the advantage in schools and courtrooms and government and news media, all those things that belittle righteousness. But we got to remember, God's still on the throne. We got to remember, even though it seemed like there's no way they were going to win this battle, they won the battle, and they turned around, and Syrian, their king, gets upset, and they want to bring out a bigger army to fight Israel, and who wins that battle? The Israelites win that battle, too. They didn't take in the factor that there is a God factor into all this. And I think sometimes us as Christians, we don't take this into factor. There's God that's going with us. He's asked us to do this. I can be a messenger. And even though sometimes it might not turn out the way it's supposed to at the beginning, God can still get the glory and God can still cause the victory. Another thing I want you to think about is Joab's pep talk in verse number 12. Be of good courage. You know, he's telling them, look, be courageous. Take courage to fight the war. Satan would have us believe that Christianity is for wimps, and it's for sissies, and it's for those that are senile and that believe in fairy tales. But it takes more courage and more faith to live for God than anything else in the world. To choose to do what's right and to choose to live for God and to obey God in this wicked world, it takes courage to do that. And next thing, not only does he do that, he says, not only to have courage, he says, consecrate. That idea of play the men means to be strong. That is to fight vigorously. Thus the soldier is to be consecrated. The battle is not for the passive. The battle is not for the timid. It is for those who are dedicated and vigorous and they're to opposing evil. Evil will not be defeated by weak forces. Evil will not be defeated by you being weak in your Christian life. You say, well, it's God that does that. Yes, but we have to rely on him. You see the cause in the fighting. It says, for our people, for the cities of God, it says in verse number 12, for our people and for the cities of God. This speaks of the motivation. It's not like the mercenaries that are the Syrians. It's not like those that have to make up for their evil things like the people of Amnon. They are personally involved in fighting for as a soldier. And then you see the creed. The Lord do that which seemeth him good. Joab's final statement here is one that trusts God to do the right thing. This is faith in God, not faith in ourselves, not faith in our ornaments or our own skills, but it's faith in God. In Hebrews chapter 13, it talks about through faith subdued kingdoms, and that's what you can look at in these verses. Last but not least, and we'll stop here, verses 15 through 19, you see the stubbornness of sin. What do you mean? Well, the Syrians lost the battle. And you know they lost. They were done. They ran before the nation of Israel. For some reason, God caused them to flee, and there was success there. But their stubbornness, you know, their reaction was when the king of Syria or the Syrians found out about it, they said, "Okay, we're going to go out and fight again." And this time, David, and it says all of Israel, which gives the connotation to all their army, goes out and he whips them again. He said, why is that happening? I want you to understand that stubbornness is something that sin is good at. Just because you defeat it once doesn't mean it's not going to come back. Just because you have victory one day over something doesn't mean that it's not going to come back tomorrow with a stronger appeal, with a stronger emotion. You know, it's stubbornness, and we got to make sure that we're ready to fight each day. So what do we learn from 2 Samuel chapter number 10? Many of the commentators and many of the different preachers or pastors or theologians I write, they skip over this in their series in 2 Samuel chapter number 10. But I found it really interesting, the fact that David showed mercy to Mephibosheth. He accepted and he was blessed. David tried to show mercy to Hanun and he did not accept it. He rejected it and it became a mess. And not only, you see, you follow evil out, you follow what happens with slander, what happens with mockery, things that are just words being said, and just not really, just having a little bit of sinful fun. But what happens in the end? It continues and it continues and continues. So be careful about gossiping and lying, because it's something that will grow and grow and grow. Be careful when you start mocking and making fun. It's something that can continue to grow and grow and grow. If you see in this story, David never is the one that begins the battle. He hears about the battle, and before they have a chance, he attacks. He's not the aggressor here. It's always the sin, because sin is always aggressive. Sin is always trying to attack. Sin is always trying to gain ground. And we must be like Joab said, we must have good courage. We must be willing to fight for the right reasons, our relationship with the Lord and for people to see Christ, and we must leave the end up to God. Let the Lord do what that which seemeth him good. 2 Samuel chapter number 10, David shows kindness, it's rejected. In our lives, there are times when we show kindness to people. There are times when we try, and sometimes people question us. You know, what are you doing here? You only came here because you wanted something. You only came here because you had to. And when we begin starting questioning people's motives when they're trying to do kind and righteous things, we begin to have the wrong attitudes toward things. How should we look at something? We should have faith that God can take care of any situation. He can bring to light any situation. We do not need to be foolish in our dealings, but we also need to make sure we're careful about we look at people's kindness and how they try to treat us. Let's go ahead and stand to your feet. Heads bowed and eyes closed for a